And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Once again, everyone, I'm Ray Shasho. Welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Melanie Safka was once hailed as the female Bob Dylan. Her awesome, inspiring lyrical connotations were accompanied by her majestic voice and an acoustic guitar. She was a lone entity on stage, but radiated a powerful force that became the voice and spirit to one of the most important generations the world will ever know. When I asked Melanie how she developed her unique and sensational singing style, she said, "I went out to imitate Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf and got it wrong." Melanie was born in Queens, New York, to a Russian-Ukrainian father and an Italian mother. Her musical career began in Greenwich Village and eventually landed her first recording contract with Columbia Records. She released several singles on the label but retained greater success after signing with Buddha Records. Her debut album, Born to Be, in 1968, was acclaimed for her independent music styles. It became clear that there was an exciting new singer on the block. 1969, the single Bobo's Party, a track from her debut album, reached number one in France. Her second studio album, affectionately Melanie, in 1969, spawned the single Beautiful People. The song became a top 10 hit in the Netherlands. Melanie's songs began gaining momentum, but she was still, for the most part, considered an unknown to the U.S. music scene until August 15, 1969. Melanie was invited to perform at the Woodstock Music and Art Fair held on a dairy farm in Bethel, New York. Her mother drove her to the event. She had been clueless to the size and significance of the concert until she witnessed Sly Stone walking around and Janis Joplin sipping Southern Comfort while being interviewed by reporters. After arriving at the hotel, she was separated from her mother and rushed onto a helicopter. While descending towards the stage area, she was in total disbelief of the mass of people attending the three-day event. Melanie shared a tent with folk musician and composer Tim Hardin while she waited her turn to perform at the most famous concert event in music history. Several hours later, she was called upon to perform after Ravi Shankar's set. Melanie was terrified, a lone woman performer with a guitar in front of a half a million people. Without a set list to guide her, she opened with Close to It All, followed by Mama Mama, Beautiful People, Animal Crackers, Mr. Tambourine Man, Tuning My Guitar, and concluded with Birthday of the Sun, a song she chose simply because it was raining. Before and during her performance, concert organizers had distributed candles throughout the crowd. The lit candles during her performance while it rained inspired her profound composition, Lay Down Candles in the Rain. She also inspired the etiquette of raising candles and cigarette lighters at concerts while portraying an audience of fireflies. After Woodstock, Melanie became the concert festival queen, performing at such outdoor events as the Iowa Rite, Strawberry Fields Festival, and Glastonbury Festival. She was also asked to perform on numerous television programs, including Dick Cavett, Ed Sullivan, and Johnny Carson. Melanie and husband producer Peter formed their own record label called Neighborhood Records in 1971. Also in 71, Melanie landed her biggest commercial hit entitled Brand New Key, number one Billboard Hot 100 singles chart, a song inspired after a stop at the McDonald's fast food restaurant. Melanie also released What Have They Done to My Song Ma, which was covered by the New Seekers and Ray Charles. The New Seekers also covered Beautiful People and Nickel song composed by Melanie. Melanie set a record for the first female performer to land three simultaneous top 40 hits, Brand New Key, Ring the Living Bell, and Nickel Song. Eleni was awarded Billboard's number one top female vocalist for 1972. She also became a UNICEF ambassador that same year. In 73, Melanie spawned the hit Bitter Bad. In 1989, she won an Emmy Award for writing the lyrics to The First Time I Loved Forever, the theme song for the TV series Beauty and the Beast. Melanie's songs have been covered by countless musicians over the years, and she has sold more than 80 million records to date. Please welcome to the show, singer, songwriter, musician, and the voice of a generation, Melanie Sofka, to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Melanie.
Hi. Well, I'm impressed.
I hope I didn't put you to sleep.
No. Wow. Who is this girl?
You know, it's so easy when you know all about the performer as well. You know, and, you know, what I always, you know, I love Ed Sullivan, but he never did his homework. You know, Larry King, he never did his homework. You know, it bothers me.
Well, so that was good. That was really good. Wow.
Thank you.
I did all that.
And more. I didn't reach.
I was really busy.
You were busy. What do you got going on these days?
Oh, I'm still busy. I'm touring and I'm writing and, in fact, my son is getting a track ready. We're going to be recording in a few minutes. And, you know, this is what I do. I just write and sing and travel. And I keep getting older. And I forgot about that part.
Well, you still look wonderful. You still look
thanks.
Could be, like, 30 years old, in my opinion.
Yeah. Thank you.
You've got some dates coming up. You've got April 14th. You're going to be at the Charles and Myrtle's Coffee House in Chattanooga, I believe.
Yeah, that's a little listening room. And then I'm going to do the Spiegel Tent in Bard College, upstate New York.
Okay.
And what else am I doing? I should have a calendar. I'm going to be in Maine, Agunquit, Maine, Jonathan's on the, what month is that, July, July 27th. And the Turning Point, that's my favorite little place up in Nyack, Piermont, actually, New York, right across the bridge from New York City. And there was talk about doing something in Central Park. They're doing some sort of a Woodstock thing, and I might be there, but I'm not sure. But,
oh, that's cool.
The summer is filling up, and, of course, this is the official Summer of Love, right?
Right.
50th, I think. Right. But next year, of course, will be the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, and pretty amazing that I'm still here, and it's also amazing to me that it's a big deal, because I was doing something totally other when the whole planning of it was going on, because I was in England. I mean, we had already said yes, we'll be there, but I'm picturing something completely different, you know, up in the country, you know, people, you know, just out in the field listening to music.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, it's at an art fair, so you're thinking, you know, oh, there's going to be arts, crafts, and all kinds of, I would have thought the same thing.
I had myself gone to pottery school in Ashland, North Carolina, you know, so, oh, I love, I can buy pottery and see potters and buy loveies. But, you know, I not even slightly did I know. And, of course, you know, the speed of the reporting of things wasn't even close. You know, so I'm in England, and there wasn't much of anything about Woodstock, if there was anything at all, and I certainly didn't hear about it. And so Peter stayed. I was contemplating not going, because I was in the studio doing my first film score, you know, so it was, and the Rolling Stones were in this next studio, and it was big stuff, and this London Symphony was there, and so I, you know, didn't know if I should go, and Peter said, well, he'll stay, and I could go home, my mother would get me. That's what happened. My mother actually took me to Woodstock. Probably one of the, that might be an only.
I think that is an
mother
only.
Took their kids to Woodstock, but
yeah, I think you told me last time too. You were probably the only straight one there.
Yeah, I said that to somebody, and they said, "Oh, I didn't know it was a gay festival." I said, "No, it meant something different then." Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you told me Woodstock was a life-changing experience, and
it was.
Yeah, and you said you had an out-of-body experience when you walked out on stage. I can't imagine just you by yourself and a guitar sitting in front of all those people. Man, I would have freaked out.
Yeah, well, I did several times during the day, and I know it's. Most people think, you know, oh, you must have been hanging out with Jimi Hendrix and, and all the guys and Janis Joplin. First of all, I was, you know, one of the few women there, girls.
Right.
I was a girl. I was totally a girl. I was, I hadn't achieved woman status yet, really. I was still very, I had just left my home, you know.
Right.
And so... And I was, I can't say naive, but open, vulnerable person.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got the dirty joke. I was one of those people that everybody would be laughing about something, and I wouldn't get what they were talking about. So that's who it was, you know, a very inexperienced. I had accompanied my mother when she was a jazz singer, and I had accompanied her when she did Little Places in the Village, but I'd never sung that much on stage. When I was a little girl, I think my mom thought I was in the next Shirley Temple. That wasn't going to happen. And so, you know, this long period of time, and then I found Joan Baez, and I found you know, authentic folk music. I was really involved in even Spanish folk music. I was involved in, and I was, you know, finding my own way of expressing myself, and I would write songs, you know, not ever expecting that anybody else would hear them but me, but or my mother and father. But you know, it was. I had never really thought that I could do this as a profession.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to be an archaeologist. That's what I
really
wanted to do.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, I found out the reality of that was that you had to take a lot of classes and things that I was terrible in. Math and algebra and there was a lot of that stuff, so... and I could not fathom 4 years of something that would be similar to high school. High school was hell for me. I think I was the first beatnik in Long Branch, New Jersey. it wasn't called hippie yet, and actually I prefer beatnik. I think beatnik has got a little more panache or something, but. A hippie was just, I didn't like that. That was a press-invented term.
Mm-hmm.
Just like teenager was a press-invented.
Right.
There was no such thing.
Well, after the hippie came my generation, and we were, you know what we were called? We were called freaks.
Freaks.
You know, I had the long hair, you know. I was like a hippie, but in a different generation.
Right.
Yeah.
For the freaks, right.
The freaks, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I became, I don't know what I became. It was very hard after the thrill of Woodstock subsided and the wars were over, and the generation kind of outlived its usefulness, and the counterculture was not anything anybody talked about anymore. Now it was all about success and money and doing it, and so the whole agenda of and the whole take on it, Woodstock was to make it ludicrous, basically. Taxi, you know, the guy, Christopher Lloyd's character, was the burned out hippie who, who was very funny because he couldn't remember it. Where he put a pencil or something.
But, I was a bit like that in my sophomore year.
Yeah.
In high school. Oh yeah.
Wow.
But everything was man, you know? That's how I was.
Man. Well, it must have been very hard to say the Ray Shasha Show.
back then I probably couldn't have said it.
Say that three times in a row.
Yeah, Ray Shasha Show, Ray Shasha Show, Ray Shasha Show.
Good for you.
You know who really had fun with my name? Dennis LeCourrier from Dr. Hook and Julian Lennon. They both had a lot of fun with my name when I interviewed them.
Yeah, well, I thought I was adding an extra H.
I looked at your website, and on YouTube, you had on your website, you were working on a song, and it had the lyrics, "It Ain't Such a Bad Way to Feel," and I really like that song. Is that one of the songs
you're
working
on? Oh, thank you. I'm writing it now. Yeah.
I love it. I really like it. You and Bo are working on that together.
So yeah, it's kind of horrific in my... I'm a really quiet person, and I don't really like to cross that line. You know, I like... I'm in front of people, they can have me 100%, but when I'm in my own living room, bedroom and stuff, I always had a lot of back off on, you know... Well, I don't know if I want people to see those are the curtains I have.
Right.
I don't know. You know, you have weird little considerations about
so funny.
Things. Maybe the color of my wall isn't cool or something. I don't know. I got self-conscious about my environment. And also, you know, I usually like to get dressed. I put, you know, makeup on. I have something that I present to the world, and my everyday life isn't it. It just isn't it, you know. But everybody was saying, you know, you really should put, you know, some real life stuff on your Facebook page and stuff. And I went, and that was about the closest I got.
I love it. I mean, you got a huge response when you did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I think
I noticed it started to get really good, but again, I'm not a major. I have a social media. You know, I have Facebook and I have Twitter and Instagram, but I'm not like a constant. I'm not obsessive about it. So
I
go in and out. But people, I mean, it's their life, you know, and I mean, I hear. You know, my friend, and they're Facebook friends. You know, I used to say, well, you know, they're not really your friends. But but now I don't even bother because people don't know the difference.
Well, you've got a Melanie Appreciation Society at Facebook. It's a little group, and it's very, very big. And you know, I belong to it, and they're very eager to hear this interview. So, they're from all over the world, you know, which is really cool.
Yeah, we have that confusion because there was a friends page, and then you could only have certain amount of friends, and then so it had to be a fan page, and then we couldn't find the person who started one of them, and so I couldn't switch it over. Because I wanted everybody to be together, but it's fine. Whatever it is, we're all together somehow.
Sure. Yeah, you got a lot of fans that love you, which is awesome. You know.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah.
Thank goodness for those people because that's how I continue, is because they still want to see me.
Melanie, you've always had such a beautiful voice. You were and always been incredibly attractive, and thousands of guys fell in love with you. Yet, you were kind of shy, and you know, you said this to me last time. You said, I was so shy and always felt ugly and never, ever felt like I was pretty. I look at my photos now and say, what was I thinking?
Really, that is so true. And my husband used to say this, someday, Melanie, you're going to look at these photos and say, what was wrong with me?
Exactly. I mean, come
but
on.
I never saw it. I because the image of what was pretty was so different mm-hmm. from what I looked like, so I... You know, just felt awkward. Of course, you know, it's the way you grow up, and, you know, some really ugly people think they're gorgeous because their parents
told
them that. I never felt that way. So,
I don't know,
because
I had a big crush on you.
Wow. If I had known, I mean, I so needed that little confidence boost. It would have been would have been great, but nobody ever told me, I guess.
They were afraid.
Of course, I was married.
So probably. So you never had, like, a secret fling with a well-known singer and musician back in the day. I know you knew the Who pretty well.
No, but there was a rumor that me and Ringo, isn't that
really?
Perfect? Of course, the Silly Beetle.
The Silly Beetle. Hey, he ended up
because
with the best girl.
He was always the Silly Beetle, so how perfect would it be that Melanie went, you know, had a thing with Ringo, but no, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen, huh?
No.
Not with Roger Daltrey? I know you hung out with the Who a little bit.
Yeah, no. If anybody, it would have been Keith Moon, but...
Keith Moon? Oh, man, that would have been
fun. It didn't happen either.
Man.
And Peter wasn't around, so that was really good.
You said in an interview that Rolling Stone magazine waged war against Buddha Records, and unfortunately, that you said they absolutely massacred me. You know, that's... I hate Rolling Stone just for doing that to you.
Oh, it was terrible. I guess they positioned me, and I wonder now if it was all accidental. You know, I mean, I was so discounted mm-hmm. as anything that had relevance or something of import to say to anybody. In fact, mostly they didn't talk about me writing the songs. The interviews used to stress how, you know, the cutesy parts, you know,
right.
And if I said something adorable, that would, of course, be the headline. And just so perfect and cute and fluffy. And and I had I always smiled mm-hmm. because I was from the Kodak Brownie era of people.
Yeah.
Cameras were just becoming part of life, you know,
mm-hmm.
and families were getting their little Brownie camera, and they would document their life with these cameras. And, of course, you smiled when the camera pointed at you, because that's what you're supposed to do. And so, you know, it was not the era of the tintypes where... A photographer would have to have people posing for 4 hours, you know,
right.
to get
yeah.
a photo. So by the time the photo got taken, nobody was smiling. but at the Brownie era of photography,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could just smile, and that's what. So I grew up with that training, and so every time a camera would point to me, I would smile. It was an instinct. And that was also worked against me, because not only was I cherubic and smiling, but I was pretty, you know, and so it, how could you possibly trust a pretty girl, you know, to say anything? It's sort of like comedians were never pretty, the girl comedians, you know. It used to be, because they can't be funny if they're pretty. I suppressed my own humor a lot.
Yeah.
Because during an interview, I would just want to make a joke all the time.
You are funny.
I knew that wouldn't be okay, you know, this would not work. So the ingenue, which I was central casting for at that point, I couldn't make little clever observational jokes.
Yeah. And
so I had a lot of fun afterward by myself, laughing at the things I might have said, but, you know, I would definitely hold that in.
And
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, your best friend in all the world, of course, is Dick Cavett.
Oh, I don't know. Again, you know what? He kind of bought into that slant.
Uh-huh.
Where if it was Melanie, she was to be discounted. She was just a fluke, you know. And they kept wanting to call me a one-hit wonder. So, you know, by the time I had three or four hits, they didn't know how to handle that. But they couldn't quite say I was a one-hit wonder.
Mm.
You know, and a three- or four-hit wonder doesn't sound as good. So they would call me other things, and I just discount me completely.
Unbelievable.
And Chris Novoselic from the Nirvana, you know, said that he's done a lot of research on music and how, I mean, music is so powerful.
Yep.
You know, that if you control it, you can control moods and tendencies in the population.
Sure.
I mean, the whole thing of the tuning, I mean, standard tuning is 440. Mm-hmm. And if you, there's a lot of research that has gone into this, but 432 and 444 are much more harmonious frequencies.
Right.
And
I read all about that. Yep.
Oh, good, good.
Yep.
So, you know, mostly I was in 432, just because I tuned my own guitar, and my natural tuning would just go to that tuning. So my early records, a lot of the stuff is in the frequency of 432. But unbeknownst to myself, I didn't have a clue, you know, about the bend, but just my natural, you know, it's the note that, I mean, it's a frequency of nature.
Right.
And it brings more of a calm and peacefulness to people, whereas 440 brings a little bit of a fear and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot easier to control people. And it wasn't just like a music group that decided to make standard tuning 440. There was pressure from the government people to change the standard tuning. So, you know, things happen. We have to look at stuff, really, because, you know, press and PR control how people think and the music that gets played. I mean, if it's not very important to people, and quite honestly, I mean, they create and manufacture artists, but kids don't care that much about them, you know? It's I'm not trying to make anybody less, but there's a lot of less out there. So
there is.
And how can, you know, you care that much about, you know, something that's really not even a singer. Most of them are auto-tuned to the max, and you can even do that live, so what difference does it make? And the communication is mostly a rhythmic thing, which I don't discount at all. I think rhythm is, I mean, I can sit and write whole albums to drum beats. I mean, a drum beat's really powerful, but it isn't the entire thing, you know.
Well, you know, I told Tom Rush this. You know, there's nothing more important and more, you know, brilliant than, you know, a person up there on stage with a guitar, a song, and a story. I mean, that's it. That's all you need. And that's what you're all about, you know. No auto-tune, no overproduced records, you know. I mean, it's amazing.
Again, I didn't mind a little auto-tune. Hey, if I hit a flat note and it happens, you know, everything. We don't sing digitally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sing from the vocal. And so the voice wavers, and that's what makes it human. But our ears have become so trained to be perfect pitch that it's almost impossible to just let a note that dips a little bit onto a modern production. So, it's fine if somebody wants to like tweak it that tiny little bit, fine, because I don't want to have to go sing three words over.
right.
It's kind of silly, you know, because it's not like, you know, a natural performance anyway. So if you can do it with a little button, fine, do it.
Sure.
But to use it to make people be able to sing is a crime, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people that have no business singing, they're making it to stars nowadays.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's crazy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why anybody who doesn't, you know, absolutely love to sing and make beautiful notes come out, why they would want to be up on stage to do it at all, except that we have a bunch of exhibitionists and that people are go out to see, and that's it.
Yeah, it's true. You, I think it was Clive Davis who was trying to push you, right, back in the 80s, to try to be, you know, put the guitar down, I guess sell out and try to be more like a Melissa Manchester, which Melissa Manchester kind of changed back then.
Oh, God,
you know? Yeah.
There was pressure from every major record label. We were, Peter was pretty clever in that he'd always have an escape clause in all of the record contracts. And that worked for me and against me because at this point of my life, there's no record label that has a strong vested interest to get me out there. So they don't service the radio stations with my music.
Right.
Because everything was on different labels, and this one was acquired by that one. And but Clive Davis, I was signed to Clive Davis twice, and not because I wanted to, but because Peter was, you know, he did all that stuff. He would,
right,
you know, what label I would and how we would do it. So Clive Davis had Arista. And seemed very excited about having me on that label, and so we were. But that was a short-lived album. We did one album on Arista with Clive Davis. Before, I think after that, we were with Atlantic, and that was a very strange talk about. I mean, if people want to investigate that one, I'd be so happy to find out. Photograph, which was like one of the best albums I have ever made. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it was one of the best albums anybody ever made. it was so good, and we did it. I worked with Ahmet Erdogan himself, and I had Art Pepper. Played a solo on one of my original kind of jazz tunes, and it was everything. And it was the first album after a long period of not having put out an album, and it was big press release and big campaign, and I did a few showcases at the Bottom Line and then Carnegie Hall. And John Rockwell said, if there is one album you should get this year, I was like on the 10 most desirable albums of the year, and you should get this album. And it was released, and Atlantic pulled it from the shelf, and it was never heard from again.
You're kidding me. Huh.
No.
Wow.
It was never even serviced in stores.
What
Something
happened?
Very weird. No, that's my question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow,
so
that's interesting.
I don't know if I ever finished the comment of Chris Novoselic. He says, my Melanie has been carefully airbrushed out of history.
Mm.
And again, it could, you know, and people say, well, why would anybody do that? I don't know. Why would anybody assassinate John Lennon?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean,
right.
Come on. I mean,
yeah.
There's so much that happens that we're told this and we're told that, and
mm-hmm.
mainstream. I sometimes feel like we live in the Matrix, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And that's why it was so popular, because there's like the take on it, you know, the media take on everything. And now back to 60 Minutes. And, you know, so what? You know, I mean, you're never going to hear the truth.
Yeah.
On 60 Minutes, you know, but you hear a slant. Everything is a slant.
There's a lot of conspiracy stuff about Clive Davis, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure.
A lot.
I won't get into it because he's still alive.
Yeah, I know.
But I was warned, because after I left Arista, I was saying things, and word came to me from an unidentified source that I had better stop telling Clive Davis stories, or else there would be no Melanie story.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. No, it was something, and again, I don't know what it was, but it was the first time I realized that, hey, you know, the artists aren't in control anymore.
That's true.
There was this brief period of time when music led a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a near renaissance on Earth. Very close.
Yeah.
And then the meddling began. Scientific,
right.
High-tech meddling. And,
yeah.
You know, people don't, you know, want to look at that. And I don't blame them, because it's so much easier to think that, oh no, that's just your imagination. Okay, I'm sorry, but probably you're happier in your idiocy, so just stay that way.
Yeah. You know, I want to tell everybody a little bit of your accolades. You were the Billboard top female vocalist in 1972. Certified gold, Candles in the Rain, certified gold, Gather Me, certified gold single, Brand New Key, UNICEF official ambassador and spokesman, Emmy Award, TV theme song, 1989. It just goes on and on. I mean, you've done such a wonderful job throughout the years. And, you know, I love your story about Brand New Key and how that all came up, and that you weren't aware.
Yeah, it was kind of an odd line in that bio. I was thinking, she wrote Brand New Key after stopping at a fast food. what is that about?
Well, yeah,
I guess I should tell you.
You told me that it reminded you about roller skating when you were a kid.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
We were passing, I had just gone on this long fast.
Right.
Nothing but water for 27 days, and I was breaking the fast very gradually.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going off to this, you know, early morning flea market when it was really a flea market, and people would just bring their stuff, and you'd go at 4 in the morning and flashlights. And so I was going home, and Dr. Bernard Jensen, the father of iridology in America, that's the study of the little dots in your iris, it tells you things about your body and what's good for it and stuff. So Bernard Jensen was a vegetarian. I had been a vegetarian, but but he discussed this with me after going on this fast. He said he thinks that I am a blood type and a body type that needs to have animal substance. Mm-hmm. That's what he called it. He did the same
thing. Animal substance.
Animal substance. And I was horrified.
Yeah.
Oh, but because by that time, you know, and I was a very overzealous vegetarian and
right.
knew all the terrible things about meat and
mm-hmm.
what they did and how it was processed and everything. So I would, I said, oh, no, I could never eat meat. He said he thinks it's a good idea to do that. So little by little, I introduced meat. But how I did it at first was I passed a McDonald's coming home from this English town flea market.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my little Hopf guitar in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were hungry, you know, because we hadn't eaten, I smelled the aroma coming out of this McDonald's. This is the old McDonald's with the
mm-hmm.
little golden arches. And,
right.
You know, 10,000 souls,
yeah.
something like that. And I, you know, I think Dr. Jensen said when my perfect diet would occur to me because I was so cleansed. I said, I think I know what my perfect diet is. So I stopped and I got the whole thing, the entire works. I mean, and I say this fiberglass milkshake because that's what it is. And the fries and rancid oils and the burger that was probably half worm or something. And I just had it. I just ate the whole thing. Can you imagine after eating nothing but water? And
it tasted really good, though.
Oh, my God. It was so good. And I finished the last bite, and
mm-hmm.
this melody popped into my head, you know. I wrote my and I started thinking about roller skating when
yeah.
I was little and riding my bike and learning how to ride, and that whole memory came back to me, and the song just came out of that, and I'd never written anything quite like that before.
Mm-hmm.
My songs were a lot more introspective, and
right.
and Peter heard it when I got home. He said, oh, Melanie, that's a hit.
And I'm
like, oh, no.
Yeah.
No. It's a blues song, Peter. Can't you hear it?
Oh,
I got a brand new pair of roller skates, then you got a brand new key. Yeah.
I love it. I love that song.
I do, too, now.
Yeah,
at
yeah.
first, I mean, I became such a reactionary to that song because it was all anybody knew of me anymore.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Rolling Stone was completely vindicated because even before that I had, you know, Melanie and the Edwin Hawkins Singers. They
right.
actually said that when my voice came in, it sounded like a pencil scratch across blackboard.
Well, you influenced that sound to many, you know, legendary singers nowadays. So they all have that same technique, you know.
Yeah.
CB
yeah,
Nicks is for one, and I mean the list goes on and on and on. It all
yeah.
came from you. So I don't think
yeah.
it was scratchy. I think it was, you know, you got such a unique.
Oh no, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I wish I could hit those notes like that now.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing.
My God, it was amazing, and
yeah.
that now I'm really, really. I know that something went on.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, and I don't know if you mentioned, but when I went to Korea and
mm-hmm.
sang in South Korea, I was
wow.
awarded the Ambassador of Peace Award. I am
huh.
now an honorary Ambassador of Peace, and my passion is human rights.
Right, right.
So you really
must be heavily concerned with what's happened in North Korea. I mean, it's. You know, it's amazing how the two can't get along, South Korea and North Korea. You know,
well, I mean, isn't that, it's not the people, is it?
It's not the people. You're right.
No.
You're 100%
it's never
right.
The people.
It's the same thing
it's
in Russia. It's not the people. The Russian people are cool. You know, it's always the government, you know. It's always the government.
Yeah. And how does that government control the true PR and propaganda and
propaganda, yeah.
What they want people to think, and I mean, all you have to do, I remember this in high school, to successfully achieve the effect of your propaganda,
right.
You line the thing that's most abhorrent in people, because most people are really decent and good,
Sure.
All you have to do is find that thing that they hate, which is, you know, injustice, anything that's abhorrent to most people, anything against decency, and align the thing that you're trying to malign with that quality or characteristic, and bingo, everybody hates it or loves it or whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always really aware of, I mean, usually if the press knocks something, I know it's good.
Yeah, exactly. You just think the opposite.
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing. The press has gotten so ridiculous, you know. It's like National Enquirer. There's no real news anymore, you know.
It's absolutely insane.
To get the real story, you got to go through like 5 or 6, 7 different sites and then kind of make up your mind, I guess.
But you kind of sense when things are being pushed on you. Well, I know this is a fact.
Right.
If it divides people,
right.
If it's a story that really makes you dislike a particular group of people, then you know that you're being meddled with.
Well, like gun control. I mean, it's crazy what goes on Facebook and people yelling and screaming at each other about gun control and the issues and, you know, the people that have had guns and, you know, want to stock all these crazy weapons or for it. And then other people are saying that enough is enough, you know. We got too many guns out there already, you know. Why do we have to have assault weapons for sale? Why are they even manufactured? We don't need them. And,
the problem is not, and I'm not going to say this is such an unpopular thing for me to say.
It is.
But quite honestly, I mean, every instance of those kids shooting people, they've all been under psychiatric drugs.
True.
They're all taking psychiatric drugs, and that point always gets buried in the press.
Yeah.
And the gun issue is a totally different issue.
Right.
It really is. The gun issue is a different issue than the shootings, because the kids have suicidal rage and homicidal tendencies because of the drugs they're taking. And if they don't have this weapon, they can have a bottle of gasoline. You can't outlaw gasoline. You know, you can't outlaw every way that a person can destroy something.
Yeah.
It's the destructive tendency that is the problem. And that's those, I mean, if you anybody can read the side effects of any of those antidepressants.
Oh my God!
There's so many lawsuits about those things, because that's the truth.
You know, we grew up around drugs, both of us, and you know, back in my day, pot was huge. I mean, you know, 80% of my high school was drugs, but we never had the drugs like they do today. They weren't that destructive, and everybody wasn't on heroin. You know, it was pot and LSD. You know, but.
Yeah.
Today, I just can't believe it. I've never seen anything like it. Everybody's
they're really pushing kids to be drugged, and mostly it's to keep them quiet.
Right.
I mean, don't get me started. I'm against the drugging of children in schools.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%.
And again, all those kids who been involved in the shootings were all on antidepressants.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's the first thing that nobody talks about. That.
Nobody
They're
talks
only
about
talking
that.
About the gun.
True. I agree with you.
You know, that, again, it's an issue. I mean, whether we have guns or what kind of guns, that's a different issue than
it's totally different.
What made people want to do that. That's the real important thing to address.
Yeah. Melanie, I just want to mention your latest EP, Ragamuffin. I loved it. There's six tracks. A lot of the tracks are kind of an old-timey feeling to the songs, which I really like. There's two very, very favorite songs that I love. Duck Bottom Boat, which it's such a cool lyrics. And another one that I think should have been a top 40 hit back in the day, if today was anything like yesteryear, Good Nighty. I love that song. That's a great
thank
tune.
You. I know.
Love it.
It's like a pop hit.
Yeah, exactly.
We went for it. Yeah, it is. I mean, some 16-year-old needs to record this.
it is a pop hit. It's vintage Melanie for sure. You know, I really really like that song. People need to buy this out. People need to buy the EP. It's available on Amazon.com. Where'd you come up with the title Ragamuffin?
Well, I dressed kind of like patchwork. And my mom used to always, and it was always that way. I was always like a little, I liked the way mismatched things looked. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a way of doing it, you know, that I thought was cool. And my mother would say, take that off, you look like a ragamuffin. And I thought, ragamuffin, that's me.
Well, awesome, six beautiful tracks. One of the songs also, which is interesting, was Golden Chains, the intro where you're laughing. What was going on there with the laughter?
Oh, sorry. Because I kept doing, I was doing something, and I kept doing it the wrong way. And every time I do it, I say, oh, my God. I know, one more time. I wasn't sure if I was doing... And Bo was playing along with me, so he was looking like, are you going to do it again? And so that's where that was coming from. But
we just did it
casual, and we just plugged in and started recording.
Love it. I just love the feel of the whole, I want to call it an album, EP. You know, like I said, it feels like old-timey, of course, you got White Man Sings the Blues, which was one of your tunes way back then, right, in the 70s or something?
No.
I thought it was. Oh, okay.
No.
That's a new one,
then. They're all unrecorded songs.
Hmm. And The First Thing I See kind of felt like you're at the sea for some reason, you know? Kind of an Irish...
It does. Well, that's my soul music, is Celtic music.
Exactly. I've always
green, everything is green sleeves, you know, and the Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond. For some reason, those melodies are just the real melodies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically my, the problem with so much music right now, and that's right into even film music, is that there's not enough melody.
I agree. You're an incredible lyricist, though. I mean, it's so cool the way you put words together. You know, like Duck Bottom Boat was really neat. Where'd you get the idea for that one?
It was a very sad, something happened, and I was very, very sad. I had been up all night.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. There's pollen flying around. I'm in Nashville.
Right.
There's stuff flying around that everybody's hacking and coughing. But I had been up all night, and I never write, when I'm really sad, but I needed to escape. And that was where I escaped to. I shall sail. I was out looking at the lake. I will sail on a duck-bottomed boat where the moon shall wane with the ebb and flow. The sun shall rise, and that's all I'll know, and that's all I'll need to know.
Yeah, very poetic.
It was just a place to go, you know, where I didn't have to worry about that, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't normally write when I'm very sad.
Yeah.
But and I think it was absolute desperation, and that's a total escape song.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Every track on that album is excellent. I'm really looking forward to more music from you. You're going to be in the studio.
Yes,
again.
Well, I know. I've got so many songs, and Bo has been working on film scores, and so we haven't been able to get, you know, recording, because it's just me and Bo, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Your daughters sing, too, right?
They're great, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Jordy sings out in Arizona, like, every night.
Uh-huh.
And Layla... Of course, she's the girl with the three children that made me a grandmother three times.
Oh,
and
right.
She has her hands full, but she's a writer in Nashville, and she goes, you know, and writes with people on Music Row and has songs on hold with people and you know, does that whole Nashville songwriter thing. But and she's great. She's got a much more refined voice. I would say much more of a, actually, you know, like a pop voice.
Right, right.
Jordy is a little more of my grit, and Bo has a really unique voice, but he swears he doesn't ever want to be a famous person.
Really? sounds like you. Sounds like your personality. Yeah.
He never wants to do that. He's a mostly a counterpoint composer,
right?
And he writes these beautiful melodies and symphonic things, and he's got to get it all out. But again, we're just us, and we're doing everything. I do my own representing, because Peter used to do everything, and so
it's
just me.
Well, I can help you on the Florida side, whatever, you know, if I can help you in any way.
I'm
here.
Yeah, I'm
as a matter of fact, stay on the phone after this interview's over. I got something good to tell you about. We were talking about, because you wanted to write the book, you know, your autobiography, and I got something good to tell you about that.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just also wanted to mention, you and Miley Cyrus got together. You did that Backyard series, Happy Hippie. It's a charity project to help fight for the homeless LGBT youth. Are you still doing that?
She just liked my tweet my Instagram last night, which is very encouraging, because I haven't heard from her in a while.
Right.
But you know, she's going through you can see a kind of career upheaval. And I can only imagine. She's a very talented girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the pressure that she's under is...
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine. I absolutely do and can imagine what it must be like. So it was nice that she acknowledged my Instagram, because it is a topical comment, and it takes a certain amount of bravery to stand with me on it. So.
Sure. Yep. Well, Melanie, here's your last question. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, is this something you ask everybody?
Yes. I get some interesting answers, too.
Oh, wow. You know, the first person that came to my mind was John Lennon, of course.
Really?
You know, we'll have to be both on the other side before I can do that. But, he had a way of thinking. It was a kind of quirkiness in his lyrics. And he was so brilliant, really brilliant, you know. I mean, that song "Imagine" is it's one of those brave songs because he says things that are so controversial.
I know.
Imagine there's no heaven and there's no reason to live or die. You know, nothing to live or die for. A brotherhood of man. But imagine all the people living life in peace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds almost innocuous, but it's brilliant, you know, because he says these very controversial things, basically no religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we are spiritual beings and that's it.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I think we could have written a dynamite song. But there are people who are living that I would like to write with. I'm not a writer with people much.
Mm-hmm.
I do write a lot with my son because his melodies are so... They make you want to write lyrics to them. So so we've been writing together, and it is a dream. It really is a dream.
You make a great team. You really do.
Yeah. Really incredible. And no, it almost sounds like, oh, isn't that cute? You know, she writes her son. You know,
I love his enthusiasm too.
We're writing together. We're just two artists. You know.
Yeah. Like you know the song you guys were rehearsing. You know, just getting started on YouTube. I loved his enthusiasm. You know.
Yeah, well,
he's working together.
You know, he has those great ideas about the chord that would go under it, which totally changes the sound of it. Gives it so much more depth if you pick the chords.
Right.
So, and that's his strong suit. You know, is his counterpoint. So
yeah.
It's great.
Well, Melanie, anything else you'd like to promote?
I'd like to promote that I'm still out there and singing, and if you get a chance, and I'm in a theater near you, you should come and see me.
I do want to see you.
Yes, and if you have a theater that is near you and you'd like me to be there, go down with a small mob of people and demand from the promoters. Because, what it is so much. I've only just thought, I have found this today. Truth. I'll call a theater or something, and they're locked up.
Right.
In a sort of agency thing. They only can book through certain agencies and stuff.
Well, I'm hoping you'll move back to Florida. You were in St. Pete for your birthday, right, in February?
Yes, and I was looking for a house, and I still would like to go back.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
It would.
People love you here in Florida.
If you know anybody with a house that they need a house sitter to watch their cat, that would be good until I find a place.
Yeah, you need to be on the beach. I could see you on the beach with your guitar.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. I miss that so much.
You'd be inspired to write so much stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, you just reminded me of a song. I just remembered. Crowd Pleaser. That's a beach song.
That's a beach song? Like, cool. Yeah, you need to write a couple of beach songs.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, Melanie, stay on the line for just a minute after I wrap things up here. I just wanted to let you know something, okay?
Okay.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. You are funny. You could do stand-up as well. You got a great sense of humor, which I love. You definitely deserve, in my opinion, to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And everybody loves you, Melanie.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a shortage of women in there.
That's right. And there shouldn't be.
They need to get me.
That's right. You deserve it because you were a pioneer of so many things, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. Okay.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You can purchase Melanie's latest EP release, Ragamuffin, at Amazon.com. For further information about Melanie Sofka, please visit www.melaniesofka.com, her official website. You can visit her on Facebook, www.facebook.com/ there. Let's see, T-H-E-R-E-A-L, Melanie Sofka. That's her Facebook, and she's also on Twitter. Twitter.com, Melanie Sofka. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of VBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast on the Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. And Melanie has asked me to repeat that three times. Let me see if I can still do it. The Ray Shasho Show, The Ray Shasho Show, The Ray Shasho Show. I did it. All right, and don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. I promise you'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by The Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on VBS Radio, Station 1.